Department of
according to our, the government priorities, the main one, the first and most important priority for service delivery, better life for all, because you know in education we open doors for everything, particularly economic growth. Why here, responding to our division of revenue, coming to hear how the both departments respond to our call for better life for all, economic development, skills, and whatever instrument can be made to make the future of our South Africans better, bearing in mind the fact that we also have education as our one of our Millennium Development Goals. Are we going to achieve it? How far will we have gone by 2014? So I hope the presentation will be really addressing the needs of the people. Can the presenter on basic education, the director on basic education, currently start with the presentation? Introduce the staff, the people accompanying him.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Let me start off with myself. My name is Bobby Subrayan. I'm the Acting Director General of the Department of Basic Education. You will notice from our presentation and our delegation that we still share a lot between the Department of Higher Education and Training and the Department of Education, which is why we have a blended delegation here today. The DG of Higher Education and Training will introduce herself, but it's Mary Matkus who's here. I'm introducing her first because we share at the moment the CFO who's here, Mr. Tim Trudeau, and who's sitting on this side is also our finance person, and Paddy next to it also deals with provincial budgets. Honourable Members, if I can then proceed with the presentation of basic education. The first part of our presentation overlaps between the two departments. This is because in the current financial year, we are sharing a budget, we're sharing personnel, and we're in the process of splitting those budgets and personnel to establish two separate departments, which starts on the 1st of April. So when higher education and training presents, there will be some overlap between what we're presenting and what they present. Firstly, what I'm going to do is to speak about the restructuring of the budget and the distribution. Given that we are concurrent function, we felt it's important, Chair, even though it's not part of our vote in this parliament, we still need to speak about provincial budgets, so we present that as well. And then we'll speak about conditional grants that are made to the provinces. Now, just to remind honorable members, the Department of Basic Education did not exist prior to this. It was created within the financial year, and it's established through a split of the Department of Education due to government restructuring. And two departments, separate departments, were created, the Department of Higher Education and Training and the Department of Basic Education. Currently, the Department of Education still exists, so in effect, we have three departments coexisting until the end of this financial year, when we'll have two departments functioning with separate budgets, separate personnel, and separate organizational structures. The functions of the Department of Education were split in terms of the legislation promulgated to give effect to that split. But in addition to that, the departments of higher education and training, basic education, and the Department of Education had to meet and look at the finer details of how that split is operationalized. And we've gone a long way to a point now where we finalized not just the split of functions, but the split of personnel and the split of budget. Now, if you look at basic education, our functions currently revolve around these broad areas. Adult basic literacy, adult basic education and training resides with the Department of Higher Education and Training, but adult basic literacy and numeracy through Kari Gude resides with basic education. And then, of course, school education as the focus. And honorable members will know that the main motivation for the establishment of two departments is so that we, as a government, could focus very strongly on these priority areas. Schools as the one area of focus, and then higher education integrated training provision as another area of focus. So that's been the motivation for the establishment of these two departments. So the budget currently and going forward is essentially based on a split of the funds, the budget, projected budgets of the Department of Education. And I'll speak in a moment about the implications of that. And the way we did this split, it was based in essence on the allocation of functions. And as you know, in terms of legislation, in terms of the PFMA and related treasury regulations, a split of function must be accompanied with the transfer of budgets. So essentially what we had to work out first was which functions reside where, and therefore which budgets would go to which department. Now, given that when you create two departments, it's inevitable that you have to replicate certain functions. Like, for example, we are obliged in law to have a certain capacity to deal with our financial obligations in terms of financial management and accounting, in terms of supply chain management, in terms of HR. All of those impose expenditure pressures on us. And because we're creating two departments out of one and using the budget of one, we anticipate that there are financial constraints now, and there will be financial constraints going into the future. And we've seen that already in our budget projection. So just to register that point, that we're working very hard to operate within those constraints, but we cannot deny that those pressures are real and we're feeling them. If you look at the budget framework, as I said, we met on a number of occasions and very carefully considered the split of functions, and those meetings were under the stewardship of the three DGs. That's the DG of Education, Duncan Hindle, DG of Higher Education and Training, Mary Metcalf, and myself representing basic education. And we agreed on how that split should occur. The biggest cost, of course, is employees, and based on the split we agreed to, the salaries had to follow those allocations, and that defined the budget as well. And then earmarked funds, which we receive from the Treasury, obviously are allocated according to functions. So that happened. Then we needed to look at, general running expenditure, like audit fees, rental, machines, and so forth, and those were split. And then operational costs and project costs were split in accordance with function. So I'm trying to give you, in the presentation I've made so far, a sense of what envelope we're working with and how we had to determine the split of that envelope between the two departments. I'm now going to go on to the Department of Basic Education's program structure, its E&E, essentially, and cover the allocations of our budget across these different programs. Honorable Chair, can I say at this point in time, Honorable Chair, I'm looking at the wrong Honorable Chair, sorry. Do you want a second? Should I pause for a second, Honorable Chair? Do you want me to continue? Okay. Thank you very much. Honorable Chair, we, in terms of the process currently, the parliamentary process, we are finalizing now our strategic plan following the Minister of Finance's speech and the finalization of our budgets in the ENE that was tabled. We are required in law to table those strategic plans on the 1st of March, which we will do. Consequently, those plans are in the process now, as I said, of being finally approved by our executing authority for tabling in Parliament. And following that, we will give details of how the detailed budget will be spent over the MTEF, but then in even finer detail over the next financial year, starting 1st of April, what we've allocated for activity. So what I'm going to present now is a broad indication of the allocation by program. Essentially, honourable members are aware that Parliament votes by program, and therefore it's important for us, in terms of our accountability to Parliament, to ensure that you are briefed in respect of each of these programs. And that's what I'm going to do now, is to give you a sense of the program and then give you a sense of what kind of budget we've allocated for it. Now, in our 2010 estimates of national expenditure, we have the following five programs. The first one is administration. It's a standard program that cuts across all departments. No matter what department you are, your program one is always administration. And that covers the minister, the DG's office, and other administration-related matters. The allocation there is $252 million. I'm going to provide more details on each of these programs. The second program, which is now specific to our department and reflects our executing authority's interpretation of the priorities. It's also informed not only our budget and program structure, but also the organizational structure of the department as we restructured in the establishment of the new department.
I'm sorry. There's a coup, so you shouldn't worry about the coup. I've taken over the chairpersonship and just want to apologize but I was delayed in another meeting. You know, I don't think that we would like you to go into details of this. But if you can cover just a salient point so that we can understand, because there will still be a room for doing that. I'm sure we'll be going to NSOP, we'll be going to appropriation to do those things. We just want to cover the salient points.
Okay, please. Sure. Okay, then, Chair, what I'll do is then go quickly over each of the programs. Yeah. If you look at Program 1, it's Curriculum Policy Support and Monitoring. This is one of our key programs, and essentially here, what we're looking at is the fundamental function of the Department of Basic Education, which is to ensure learning and teaching results in quality outcomes, and we intend to do that through the curriculum, improving implementation, streamlining the curriculum, establishing institutional capacity to support provinces. So that's essentially under Program 2. Chair, you'll tell me if I'm going too brief, so that's what I'm going to say under that program. Then under the next program, which is Program 3, another important area, Chair, which is the teachers and human resources in the education system, basic education system. We know that teachers are central, and unless we ensure that teachers are optimally used, they're essential and they consume 80% of the budget. We need to focus on effectiveness there. And again, these are the key things we're focusing on: human resource management, developing mechanisms to support teachers, teacher education as the key areas, and the outcomes are to improve quality of teaching and learning. Then the other important area, honourable members, is Program 4, which, as you would have heard from the President's State of the Nation address, one of the key things in specific terms that he emphasized in working differently, in making 2010 the year of action, is to speak about greater assessment of learners and schools and everybody involved in the education system. So that is the key thing that we'll be focusing on this year as a department and in the sector. The President said that grades 3, 6, 9, and obviously 12 will be assessed, that there'll be independent assessments of schools. This is a key area of activity for us going forward. We need to ensure we have the framework, the information, the institutional mechanisms, the stakeholder involvement, parental involvement to use the information. Then Program 5, honourable members, is a area that some people don't recognize as being important, but we know schools are social institutions. They are shaped by the community, and their success is determined by whether or not the community is involved in the school. And therefore, we have an entire program, a branch in the department that deals with this. Here we talk about making schools the center of community life, social inclusion, equity in education, health, which includes HIV/AIDS, and the measurable objectives there are gender, farm, rural education, things we pick up are things like teenage pregnancy, school nutrition, all those things that impact on schooling outcomes. And here our partnership with the Department of Health has proven to be very important. In terms of provincial budgets then, I've covered the national budget, and again I said this is not part of our vote, but I wanted to give you a sense. The provincial budgets going forward are $128.3 billion, $138.9 billion, and $145.6 billion. Obviously, a substantial portion of government spending and the biggest proportion of government spending goes to provinces. You get a sense in the next slide of what each province has allocated, and you'll see that we still have problems about the equivalence and equity between provinces. For example, Gauteng, $20 billion, Limpopo, $17 billion. Gauteng has got less learners than Limpopo. And this is a problem every year that we try to address. Gauteng obviously has a bigger budget and greater flexibility to make those allocations, Honorable Chair. But for our objective of addressing poverty, especially within provinces and then also between provinces, this continues to be a challenge for us. This is detailed, Chair, which you said I should skip, so I'm not going to go into that. If Honorable Members have questions. No, you said I'm not going to. Sorry. Wrong. Okay. I'm not quite sure exactly where I should pitch it, so I'm going to guide me, as I said. Just interrupt me at any time to tell me I'm going too fast or too slow. This is an important one, Honorable Members, in education. When we assess education, this is a very important slide to remember. Because, you know, the problem people always pick up, Honorable Chair, is around equitable shares and how that gets translated into provincial budgets. Because what happens is the national department sets priorities, but it does not determine the budget. The budget is determined in provinces. Now, Honorable Members know this, so I may be telling you what you know already, but what the national allocation includes is a broad guideline of what proportion of a province's equitable share should go for different functional expenditure, like education, in a province. And those are indicative. A province then has discretion to decide exactly what proportion goes. So what we do is we monitor these proportions across provinces to see more or less if they're prioritizing education. And you'll see here that some provinces like Limpopo are really prioritizing education. 53% of their budget goes on education. But because their budget isn't that big, you have seen in the previous slide that the amount is actually smaller than Gauteng's amount, even though Gauteng only allocates 46% of its budget. That simply says Gauteng has got much more money. But we monitor this on an ongoing basis to ensure that all provinces give effect to the priority of allocating money for schooling and allocating it at adequate levels. So this is a very important measurement that we track, and we ask you to track as well. The other important thing, Honorable Members, is there's a number of conditional grants that are managed by the National Department that goes to provinces, to schools that are significant in the system. One of the very successful ones, and it's a success of this government, is the school nutrition program. If you look at the figures there, $3.6 billion in 2010-11, growing to $4.9 billion in school nutrition. It's a significant allocation. It's maturing quite well. There are still needs across the system. There are challenges in how money is allocated. But clearly there in terms of spending, and even in terms of procurement, we've gone a long, long way with that. There are certain challenges we can speak to as we get into discussion. HIV/AIDS and life skills is another important conditional grant that goes to provinces. And then to reflect government's priority of technical education, there's a technical schools recapitalization program starting at $80 million in 2010-11, growing to $210 million in the outer year. Generally, schools is to improve maths and science. Those are also conditional grants to ensure that national priorities are met. I'm not going to go into the details of the goals of the National School Nutrition Program, which is on the screen now. We can speak about those. These are the allocations for the National School Nutrition Program by province. It's poverty-driven. So the poorer the province, the greater the allocation that is given there. HIV/AIDS, again, that's the strategic goal. These are the numbers in terms of outputs of people trained that we're trying to get to. And that's still HIV/AIDS. And then technical school recap, we've given you a sense in the presentation, which has been handed out of the intention of the grant and what we're trying to achieve from it. In terms of consolidated allocations then of conditional grants, it's on the slide on the screen at the moment. You will see that it grows substantially over the period, and a lot of it relates to what I've just explained a short while ago. Right. Honorable Chairperson, I'm going to stop at that point. I've tried, in summary, to give a sense of where we've come from in the split of the two departments, what how we've gone about the allocations, some of the pressures we experienced, the current program structure flowing from the Minister of Finance's budget, and what allocations have been made there. I tried to speak about the priorities under each program, and I tried to give you a sense of provincial allocations, but also the conditional grant. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DG, and welcome to your new position. Congratulations.
Sorry, I'm still acting DG. I am acting DG. I am acting DG.
I will appoint you. Don't you worry. Parliament has power.
Everybody's acting.
Honorable members, just would like also to thank you for starting with the meeting. There you are. We're having two departments. Maybe let's try to engage with this one for the next 30 minutes. I see National Trust is here, FFC are here so to support us. You're welcome. Thank you. Honourable members, over to you. Comrade Masiko, how are we here? Among my
Thank you, Chairperson. Following the discussion, I would like to clarity on when the acting DG presented about provincial budgets that they get the biggest share. What didn't come out clear was that the national departments set the budget, provinces set priorities. There seems to be a dislink. So I wonder if we can come together and so that the national priorities should, because you set the budget, I think, based on priorities, even if it's not stated here. And immediately, these priorities don't link. There seem to be a problem because the provinces will prioritize whatever they thought was a priority, whereas nationally, we all think that the priority was based on what the budget was allocated for. And clarity again on technical school capitalization, has it got anything to do with this FETs, or is it something different from that? And the one that was not mentioned, do you know that there's this problem of where transport is based? Have you resolved the problem with the Department of Transport so that we know that the children go to school and they have transport, because the priority is that the children must arrive at school. And with the with transport being the, in the other department, it causes some disadvantages for the children, because we want to see the children in class learning and seeing outcomes. But when the transport is controlled in a different department, it also seems to be a disjuncture. Thanks very much.
Napolo.
Thank you, Chair. Acting DG, thanks for the presentation. On slide 6, administration 252.8 million. Is this for both DGs or for the DG in the basic education area only? And the equitable shares, slide 11, compensation of employees remains the biggest portion of the budgets of provincial education department at an average of 79.9% for compensation of employees. Then is it not very high? Does this also include OSD? And then does it mean that the remainder of this goes into education itself? And then on school nutrition, can the department look into this quintile problem and nutrition in schools? Because really, quintile really spoils the broth. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. The question I just want to ask the DG is really general question. The chair opened the meeting by saying that the education does get a big slice of this budget in order for it to be able to deliver the results at the end of the year, and I assume you're happy about that point. My question is related to that. What is your take? I'm concerned. I know that we are restructuring, and the restructuring of the department 1 to 2 does do something also more in terms of moral in terms of what that happens. But the question is, what is your take in terms of readiness to deliver results with substantially a good outcome or output? Is the department ready to deliver and implement so that the outcome or the output at the end of the year is different than the general output that we've seen? I mean, I don't want to paraphrase the media. One media said, if you were to put people in a stadium, 230,000 is like a soccer city or two stadiums full of learners that have not made it. So my question in all this set, including capacity in teaching and the capacity attitude of teachers, are the unit itself of basic education ready to deliver for that result we're talking about, including the counterpart in terms of the provinces, because this is a unit that operates as one. So that really will be, for me, the main question I want to ask. The second one, which is related to that, is the looking at the distribution of resources, including the resources to help a poor school for learners to be able to learn the nutrition program. Equally, the question is, in terms of preparing, understanding that the financial year begins on the 1st of April, is the counterpart ready to implement? I wouldn't say deliver, to implement. Because I think we did speak to education before about that readiness and withholding monies because of what is called capacity that of the provincial department not to implement. So I'm asking the question in terms of, if you look at your slide that speaks about planning, evaluate, monitoring, assessment, you suggest that that's the head, the heart of this department, including the counterpart at the provincial level. So really, that's a general question. Are we ready to deliver and get that outcome, given the slice of budget that you perceive, that basically can we complement with what we do? That's really the general question I want to know from the department.
Comrade Harablan.
Thank you, Chair. Only two questions. I want some more clarity about the technical schools. That's on page 25, the allocation grant principles there. And then, just for clarity, I know that there were policies that I think...
What clarity do you want about technical schools?
That's clarity on that, 25.
The same question that somebody asked earlier on.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. The second one is just clarity on, in the rural areas, we have many problems with, you know, children that stay 3-4 kilometers away from school. Now, I think the policy is you must be at least 5 kilometers away from school, then there's a bus that can pick you up. But, you know, in my place where I'm staying, in Mossel Bay and in the Southern Cape, it is very difficult for small children to walk up in the hills and the counties. Are you going to relook at it, or is there any thing that we can take back to our constituencies? And then the other thing is, can you give me clarity on the thing that the minister said last year, that we will look at more teaching and less administration? Now, I'm also in family work. Family is also involved in that kind of thing, the profession, teacher profession. Now, the big complaint is that most of the time they are busy filling in forms and all that kind of things. So I think that if I can ask you, what is your viewpoint on that, and where do you address this specific in the budget of this respect? Thank you.
The acting DG stated that they're almost ready with their strategic plans at the moment, would give you your outcomes. We were given the assurance by Treasury last week that BAS and PERSEL allows departments the opportunity to monitor those outcomes. Can the department confirm that statement is correct? Okay.
That's for me. My comments, perhaps, and the question is around the issue of training. I think there's a former MEC here. She will tell you the issue of training, of development of teachers. In Gauteng, for instance, now there's an issue that says teachers must not be trained, must not agree to be trained after hours, in other words, after training, except they are given overtime for doing that. How are you going to deal with this without necessarily interfering with the class, that the teachers are required to be in class and teach children? And most of the time, come November, everybody's writing exams. Children are left alone there. Well, maybe we ask you to summarize too much. But how ready are we with this testing of children, grade 3 and so forth and so forth? And clearly, South Africa, for instance, spends more. I'm not sure there's any other country in Africa that spends as South Africa spends. But our outcomes don't really tally.
how are we going to deal with the situation? Maybe it's good. Maybe it's a good thing that your FET colleges are transferred to that, so that at least there can be. I mean, we can produce our own steel. We can't be importing electricians and everything. Plumbers, just simple things that we could produce ourselves. The last comment is around the infrastructure. I saw, you know, in one of your slides you put it, but maybe you preferred not to speak about it. But there are some provinces which really can't afford. You know, President Thabo Mbeki, I think it was 2004, 2006, somewhere there, said no child will be learning under the tree from end of that financial year. 5 years down the line. So there's a joke that says, no, we must cut the trees and then leave the children in the open. Which means that if the school is on a rainy day, then there's no school in there. You see, what all these questions lead to, acting DG, is a question of the relationship. It's our own constitution, the concurrent functions. You have these priorities, national priorities, but at the end of the day, the provinces must allocate. And this money, the other year, the National Treasury gave monies for allocated infrastructure. Then you know what happens, and then that allocation was not made as grants. Then it's absorbed, and the priorities change when they come there. Yet we do know that infrastructure is really a big, big problem, especially in our rural provinces. But I'm saying the challenges of that.
I'd just like to know whether how far we are and what the status of the reintroduction of physical education as a subject at schools.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. When you closed your previous comments, you said you're going to appoint me, but I notice now you're calling me acting DG again. Could have you left for a moment. I must thank the honourable members for those questions. It helped me because when the chair told me to cut down, I cut down quite a bit. So I want to thank you all for giving me the opportunity to elaborate on critical issues. Starting with the first point, ma'am, I should have really made this point. It's an absolutely critical point about provinces and their budgeting. Constantly, departments like ours, health, have confronted this problem. Now, it's not entirely true that provinces can simply budget the way they want to. There are clear guidelines from the National Treasury. We have meetings in terms of the min-max. We have the Budget Council, all of which drive priorities. Now, the priorities are defined at national level, and they are supposed to be implemented at a provincial level. Now, that's the way the budget is supposed to work. In practice, we've got problems in that area in terms of how we deal with it. Now, that's an issue which the current administration has tried to confront very strongly. If you look at innovations that appear that the President spoke about, for example, he spoke about now a performance agreement with the Minister of Health and Basic Education respectively for the entire sector. And that means that we're now going to plan as a sector and not as a department like we've done before. What I should have spoken about, and I'm thanking you for this, to give me the opportunity to say this, that one of the key things we're working on in the sector is the development of a basic education action plan. That speaks not just to the Department of Education, speaks to the entire sector, looks at budget priorities, look at what provinces need to do. But that action plan is not simply just a plan on paper. It's the basis of the minister's performance agreement with the president. So it's actually part of this new government's, the new approach in government to performance management. It's in the green paper that Minister Chabani put out. So that's what we've tried to interpret going forward. So again, I must thank you for that question. That is something that really needs to be emphasized in the way we're talking about a different approach. So honorable members, many of you have asked this question. What confidence can you have that we're going to do something differently? I believe, and I've been here for many, many years, and we've confronted these challenges over and over. We've been through periods of optimism and periods of pessimism. I believe that this is an important innovation, and I think this is going to help us to address those problems. Technical schools are different from FET colleges. FET colleges are colleges that focus very much, they're separate institutions, focus very much on vocational, and they sell big institutions. They can operate in the FET band and beyond that. They in the Department of Higher Education and Training. But we've also got schools that have a vocational slant, and they call technical schools. So the recap I spoke about is the recap of those schools. And so they're not FET colleges, and they're under the Department of Basic Education. They're not many, which is why the budget is small. DG of Higher Education and Training will talk about the FET colleges, and there the budgets are significantly bigger in terms of what is required there. Okay, let me go on to the other questions. On administration, is it for one or both? It is only for basic education, but I know it looks a lot. It's not for the DG's salary, I wish it was. It is for the DG's office, all the personnel, the ministry, all the personnel, and it includes 126 million for a new building. So that is what the amounts are for there. And then Honourable Member really put a finger on the nail here about compensation, 79%. That's a big challenge in education. Look, because education is labour intensive, because it's made up of teachers, throughout the world, the bulk of the education budget is spent on salaries. But what we're trying to do is to try and make sure that it stays at 80 and comes below that. The norm we established is to say it can't, if it goes above 85%, then really red lights come on. And over the years, in fact, when we started, it was 90%. We've tried to manage it down. But you're absolutely right, Honourable Member. If we don't manage that, we don't have inputs like textbooks and so forth that goes into schools. I like the pun the Honourable Member came up with about spoiling the broth on school nutrition. That's a very appropriate pun. And you're again very right. The quintile system is causing problems. We are reviewing it currently. And the issues you've raised about putting schools into quintiles that are not appropriate is the problem we're trying to solve. So very soon there'll be revisions to those norms to deal with that. I'm trying to go quite quickly. The next question, are we ready to deliver? Can Honourable Members here in the nation have confidence? When I spoke about the action plan, I think that's a new thing that's significant. I think there's a number of new developments. The performance management system is new. I think the climate of labor, peace and social contracts there are significant. And I think our focus on measurable outcomes are important. If you put those things together and the commitment in respect of budgets, I think we're sitting on conditions that are significantly better in the past. So, Honourable Member, I think we are fairly confident that we're going to make progress. We believe education is not a short-term thing. I mean, you can't solve education in grade 12. You've got to start from grade R. So, clearly, we've got to understand that. But the important thing is I think we have conditions to make the change. The Honourable Member spoke about provinces. Again, there, that is the challenge. We've had that challenge in the past. The way we've structured the department is to make sure that now we focus very much on supporting provinces, supporting implementation and working with provinces. Honourable Member repeated the question about technical schools. I've answered that. Rural children, I know the norm is greater than 5 kilometres you allow transport, but I agree with you that there are some cases where there's a river and hills, you've got a problem. We've in the past looked at trying to reduce the number of small schools because it's just a problem in terms of multi-grade teaching and so forth. We're now saying that, look, that sometimes creates problems that you're pointing to when learners have got to walk long distance. So we're looking at what's the balance. In some cases, sometimes multi-grade teaching, if done properly, may be a better solution than getting learners to walk long distances, boarding facilities, all of which are very expensive. But I must say, the problem of providing schools in low-density areas is a big problem. It's a global problem. And we're really trying to confront different options there. And clearly we need to work closer with the Department of Transport to get those things going well. The question about BEST and PERSEL and help us to monitor outcomes, it's indeed true that BEST and PERSEL allows us to monitor expenditure trends and how those expenditure trends may be linked to different budget lines. But that's just one side of outcomes.
even in the Treasury's documents, they speak about actually monitoring output indicators themselves through verifiable data. So that's the second leg of what we're doing in our budget reform process. Linked to that is not simply data for outcomes, but the credibility of data. So even the Auditor General now is talking about auditing the credibility of those outcomes data. That's a long thing I can talk about. I don't want to go into detail. I'm not even looking at the chairperson at the moment because I know he's going to stop me in a moment. But that is an important area in terms of your accountability and oversight.
In short, systems can't monitor outcomes.
No, they can't monitor the actual output. They can monitor the expenditure, which is significant in monitoring output. It's extremely important because what it says is you spend this amount on that, and that is significant in terms of the output. What you then need to do, if the BEST says that you spend this amount of money on textbooks, it's clear it's a significant output. You then don't need to corroborate it to say that the textbooks are in schools. That's what I'm saying. So you need to complete, and the Treasury is in their documents are saying that as well. Going to your questions on the training of educators, absolutely important there. And there the Departments of Higher Education and Training and Basic Education collaborate very strongly. We'll have to collaborate in the future because that, as you say, is a critical thing. To answer your question specifically about time, there's a negotiated agreement that all educators are allowed 85 hours for development. They not only are allowed, but they must engage in their period. What we're working on now, following our summit with teacher unions, is how we can qualitatively provide teacher development opportunities for them to make use of their time. 85 hours. Of development. But the thing is, you know, we're trying to make sure it's used productively and efficiently. How ready are we testing children? Honorable Chair, we've done this. We've been doing this for a few years now. So we've got a track record. What we want to do now is make sure that we take it to the next level in a manner that's consistent with what government's asking us for now. That's the short answer to that. In terms of spending and skills, education and training will speak to that, but certainly this country is spending very high on basic education. And, you know, the economy and skills and so forth that occur post-school depends heavily on the quality of basic education. So it's critical that we fix that up. But also there are huge social benefits that flow from basic education. So we generally don't talk about basic education as skills purely, but it's critical in respect of skills. But we need to also acknowledge it's got a huge social role as well. Infrastructure, Chair, and I'm happy you asked me this question as well because I rushed over that one, which I should have explained. The President feels very, very strongly about this. In fact, he had a discussion with our Minister on this one. What we're developing now, Chair, which is different from before, is a comprehensive, accelerated program for infrastructure and capital development, and one that works around the problem of available budgets on a year-by-year basis. We're working with the National Treasury and the DBSA to look at how we can use their respective facilities. I'm talking about financial arrangements and so forth, to really accelerate upfront the wiping out of infrastructure backlog, especially mud schools and those sorts of things, and then pay that off over a number of years. Now, part of this action plan I spoke about with the provinces will have as one of its key elements in it, this infrastructure plan. So it's a critical thing. Again, what's new? What are we doing differently? This is one example of something concretely that we're doing differently to say, let's work with Treasury and education. In fact, the two ministers, Finance and Basic Education, already had some discussions on that matter. And then we're having a joint MINMAC with the Treasury pretty soon. I think the date may already have been set to transact some of these issues, including this one. In terms of the concurrent function, Chair, you've raised that it is a problem. As I said, there are certain new things that have been done. The Minister Chabani's green paper, you will know, also speaks about intergovernment relations. It speaks about the Presidential Coordinating Council from before, renaming it into the Presidential Implementation Forum and giving it new teeth. The Intergovernment Relations Act, legislation in the different areas of concurrent function. We're trying to bring all those things together to address this. But significantly, what Minister Chabani suggested
again is important, Chair, is this creation of a delivery forum. So in each of these outcomes that government has identified, of which basic education is the number one priority, it calls for development, establishment of a delivery forum. And that forum is also intended to address these problems. So again, there's huge developments, but at the end of the day, Chair and Honourable Members, the extent of their success depends on the nature of our agency and our commitment to make it work. From our minister's side, she's highly committed to making this thing work, and certainly that is the message we have in the department and in the sector as well. Physical education, short question, short answer, yes. We've met with the Department of Sport, we're looking at the curriculum, and certainly it's been a gap, and something that we certainly want to address to fix up. Chair, I haven't gone into detail in all the questions. I couldn't read your expression, so I tried to be as brief as I could. If I've left anything out, please tell me, and I'll carry on. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, unfortunately, there won't be a round two, but I would want National Treasurer to comment just on some of the issues that have been raised, after which FFC, you ready? Sure.
Thank you very much. Maybe what I could do is just build on some of the points already been made by the Department of Basic Education, particularly the issue about concurrent sanctions, particularly how it relates to education. It's indeed true that there's quite a lot of processes underway to ensure that there's alignment between national priorities and provincial budgeting take place. In addition to the political forums that we've got, such as the Budget Council, MINMIX and the like, what we also do every year is, in addition to the allocation letters that we send to provinces to indicate to them exactly these are the additional amounts that we've secured, these are the purposes it should be used for, what we also do is every year we've got what we refer to as benchmarking exercises, where the national department and the responsible, quite a few attend, where our provincial treasuries attend and ourselves attend, when we actually go through the provincial budget and actually do that comparison, whether that alignment is indeed there. And if there's not an alignment, we do take steps, even on political level, to try to get that alignment through. So there's quite a lot of work on the go. Another issue that's complementary to the concurrent functions, and I raised the issue yesterday as well, is that the provincial equitable share formula is currently under review. To ensure that we get better alignment, again, between the funding of these very important functions as well as the expenditure allocations. I think that's it from our side. An issue that we can maybe just flag, but it's not for this discussion, it's for the later discussion, it's one of the issues raised as well as the FET colleges, which would most probably be addressed by higher education, particularly an area that's important there is to actually explain in more detail exactly where the shift took place, how it took place, because there was a bit of discussion needed on that issue.
Well, thank you very much. I thought that you would talk about something that you spoke about during the presentation about the delivery of the textbooks or workbooks. Yes. FSC.
Thank you, Chair. On our side, basically, our comment will be around the provincial equitable share. As the DG has indicated that the bulk of it, of course, has been, you know, has been earmarked for personal cost increases. I think our concern there is the issue of if, for instance, you put a lot of your budget on personal increases, what will be the impact of that on the quality of services related to that. For example, if you look at teacher training, what will be the impact of, you know, putting more money on compensation of employees, while you also have to look at other services such as teacher training. And then the other issue, I think, is the one that Treasury has already indicated, the issue of the FET grant. Of course, it's a new conditional grant that has been introduced, and there's issues around the concurrency of the function, as we indicated, and we also would like to understand why did the department decide to move the function, you know, taking into account that it's a concurrent function. And it will also be interesting to find out about the performance of these FET colleges and, you know, and of course the issues of the budget around that. And then another issue is it's on conditional grants themselves that are managed by the department. Would like to know whether the department has, you know, already started looking at the performance of this conditional grant, especially the school nutrition programs. The reason why we're raising this issue is because currently the commission is also looking at the issue of reviewing the conditional grant, especially looking at the issues of the duplication of grants, as one of the honourable members has asked the question of whether there's a difference between, you know, the technical grant that you are talking about and the FET colleges. So those are the issues that would like to hear from the department, basically. Thanks, Chair.
Now you're putting me on the spot. I was asking you to comment. Now you're raising questions. I am not going to allow you, DG, to respond to those questions. But I think that the FFC, the questions that she's raising, she is merely emphasizing on some of the proposals that they have put as the FFC, which means that we can take them as a warning that when FFC presents its what is it called? It's a recommendation sometime in May. Those things will come up because during the week when Treasurer was presenting, the issues that she is raising, we did raise them. We're having a discussion that between them and us and maybe yourself, I mean between yourselves with both department and them, especially with respect to issues of concurrence. There are sometimes, if you used to do things in a particular way, you assume that that responsibility is just if it has been allocated to me, that it can be changed and be allocated to someone else, because concurrent doesn't mean that it's a provincial or a national. It means that both what you call a national and the department must continue to consult on this matter. But I'm saying it's an issue that when they make recommendations, we will engage in them. And clearly the other issue, I don't want you to respond, but maybe you can respond in, we don't have time. And I mean the issue of more funds being allocated for personnel rather than non, what you call personal issues again. Now the problem is that if I give you time, you won't take the time that just to clarify some of these things. You could try to be short because we really want to wind down. You know, maybe what you could do is to respond in writing to the issues that we raise, and then we will what you call it. Would like to have an EN that bilateral, you know, if you could respond in writing so that all of us. Yeah, but just to say in closing, if I say acting DG, you put me on the spot. Just to say in closing, you know, we we think that the department has our support, especially with the new approach of outcomes. But the sooner those outcomes come to us, so that when we do oversight, we know exactly what is it that you have committed yourself to do. If there are outcomes that we can't measure, it makes things difficult for us. But I do hope that when you come with your strategy plan to the portfolio committee, maybe by then you will be having be able to clarify some of these things more. The other issue that was raised, and I suspect that sometimes you omitted in your response, is the issue of the quintiles. You know, I have for my constituency, I'm very active in visiting schools. You find the schools in an informal settlement. There are two houses around. It's quintile 3. A house in formal settlement, a school that is in a formal, what they call a situation, you know, it's quintile 4, and the children, I don't know, we really don't know how you arrive at this categorization of quintiles 1 and what, but clearly, as Parliament, can be the responsibility of the departments alone, because the way the department does it, and when we ask questions, we can't take questions. Responses acting PG that says no. It's the principal, it's the schools themselves that made those recommendations, because you go to school, school says no, comes from the department. The department says no. Recommendation comes from the schools or communities around it. So clearly, we are going to play at least a little bit of a closer a role in terms of ensuring that we deal with these things. Because the problem with classification of these quintiles, it has implications on the distribution of resources. So that's why then we really have a difficulty with that. But you say you want to clarify something quickly?
No.
Okay. No, it's fine. I think that that is the issue that we are at least trying to ensure that together we can raise. In fact, my colleague raises something that, as this committee has raised, the issue of transportation of children, where you say now is the responsibility of transport. And transport says no, they get instructions from education. And we, as Parliament, we have a different view. And our view is that you are responsible for education. And part of transporting of this child moving to school should really reside with education and someone else. And maybe we must come to a stage where we have our own, what you call, engagement with the department. Because these things have implications, you know. The issue that was raised about 5 kilometers and what. And fact, how much is a kilometer? How long is a kilometer from here? Now, you say this poor child must move 5 kilometers because the child is poor. 5 kilometers is nothing. Can you move? Can you walk 5 kilometers to your place of work? You walk on foot, you don't catch a bus. Can you do that? So those are the things that we must really look at. But we know that the implications in this concurrent function are the current issue that we must deal with. So, it means that just now our recommendations are very clear in terms of that. It can be the we don't know what the transport department takes into account. We are aware of maybe financial implications that are there. But if you want Captain PG, you can send also a return, what you call your return comment on this matter before we make recommendations. Today is our last day of these hearings. We'll be finalizing our report Tuesday and Wednesday. Thank you very much for coming, and my apologies for not being on time. Thanks.
Enjoy the soccer. Yeah? Must be in school now, they play soccer.
I see that
yeah.
Honourable members, I see that the department is very sporty. You are asking them about the physical education. I mean, from their way, you can see that they are very sporty, what you call a department.
You want the children to be like that.
May I take this opportunity to welcome you're not acting. you don't belong to Hollywood. Yes, the PG. I don't want to talk about other things, PG. Let's talk about education.
Very good appointment.
Thank you very much. I'm sure we really appreciate the fact that you have come, which will assist us in clarifying some of the things. The question, for instance, that were raised about the FETs, I worry about the qualifications that come from those FETs. Children are allowed there to study accounting, blah, 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 and think that at the end of the day, they will be qualified in accounting. And I'm not sure why we allow these kind of things. Some of the things that one has picked up there is that when people want to do certain courses, for instance, the bursary part does not cover if the child, I have spoken to some other children who have come to me in my constituency and said to me, I can't do experiential training because I don't have money. What the school can provide is a tuition in the classroom. If I want to go to do experiential training, it means that I must pay for more. And clearly, and some of these things are the things that we really need to look at and hope that you will comment. But may I allow you to present? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
But just to say that I hope that I'm not squeezing you too much. 30 minutes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to thank the committee for the invitation, and I assure you I will be brief. I also want to thank Mr. Tenth Trudeau, our CFO. We share him with basic education until the 30th of March, and then he'll be the CFO for higher education. Chairperson, I think that I may possibly be finished even before the 30 minutes, because I understand the purpose of the presentation is to really explain to the committee the Division of Revenue Bill in relation to the split between national, provincial and local in respect of higher education and training. Clearly, because education is such a priority, there will be issues around content, but it wasn't our intention to specifically address content. I'm doing that to the extent that it's necessary to understand the division of revenue, also to answer some of the questions that have been asked, and I understand that because education is a priority, there may be more questions about content than really about division of revenue. In terms of the information, there's simply, it's two parts. One is just to talk a little bit more detail in relation to higher education and training, of what's happened with restructuring education and training and the distribution, and then I'm going to look at the conditional grant to provinces, which is the only item within DORA that is of interest to you. Prior to the coup, the chairperson had made the point that the committee has called our departments because it's understood that education and training is a major priority of government. And there also has been a sense in the public after the budget speech that a huge amount of money has been allocated to education and training altogether. Now, I think that some of the complexity of that has been covered by DG Sir Brian in terms of the basic education budget and the fact that nearly 50% of provincial budgets goes to education. In terms of higher education, I'll talk about the complexities there. The second point I want to make before looking at the restructuring is that one of the challenges that I think we will be revisiting with committees in Parliament over the next years is that to establish a baseline for a new department is quite a challenge. In functions that are inherited intact, so all of the functions in that branch or in that division were historically dedicated to functions that are now in the new department, it's quite clear. But there's some baselines that some of the history was basic and some of the history was further. So I think that that's going to be something that we've done our best to establish those baselines, but they may need to be tested. In terms of this slide, the thing that I do just need to focus on is where is basic education received functions from the Department of Education. Our situation has been considerably more complicated because we received functions from both the Departments of Education and Labour. Now, the functions that we received from Education, the DOE, that closes at the end of March, were adult education and training, excluding the literacy, karigudi. So it's post-literacy education and training, the vocational education and training, the colleges, university education. Skills development and the skills development legislation has been received from the Department of Labour. What's not listed there but is very important is that to establish corporate functions, to establish the capacity to manage finances, to manage personnel, to manage policy, and to do communications, is that there's been a split of those functions from corporate with from Department of Education with a little bit from Labour, but probably not enough, which I'll come to just now. In terms of the splitting, the second point says that there was an agreed framework, but I do want to indicate that that agreed framework meant that, and this is well understood, I think, in Treasury and across departments, is that when the new departments were established, the size of the national budget didn't increase to accommodate new, so we've had to split the money that's available with the existing departments, and that is going to put huge challenges on both BASIC and us, and I'll address that in the next slide. The last point that I want to address in terms of the broad framework is that whilst we worked with education and there was mutual agreement on how functions were to be split, which meant that we then had clear agreement on what posts were to be allocated and therefore what personnel, with Labour that was never achieved, and so the split with Labour was done by Treasury. And there still are some outstanding matters. The last point, and I'm sure that all departments say this, but nevertheless we do need to say that we may experience budget constraints, and I'll talk about that just now. And fundamentally it's to do with the fact that you just, for example, if I make it very concrete for members of the committee, if you take something like the finance team had to be split. 70% on one side, 30% on that on the other side. The exact percentage is not exactly that. And so then higher ed must manage this financial function with 30% of what was in the basic ed. And there's scarce and critical posts within that that we are going to have to work on a service level agreement to make sure that we can cope. If I look at the budget distribution framework,
We've already understood that the budget was split according to agreed framework, concluded with education, not concluded with labour. And then once you'd agreed on the framework and agreed on the shift of functions and posts, then the employees shifted and the money moved with them. I'm going to hurry because some of these issues I'll pick up on the next slide and because of time. But if we look at the restructuring of education and the distribution of the budget, what's very interesting is that the total amount that was given to the Department of Higher Education and Training in the budget speech was an amount of about 32 billion. And it sounds a huge amount of money. You'd think that we'd be very happy. Well, we are very happy. But I need to explain to the committee, just in terms of background to content, that a lot of this is money in and out straight away. So if you keep a running total, money comes into our budget for the CETAs at 6.7 billion, for the National Skills Fund, 1.7 billion, provinces, and I'll come back to that, that's the major part of this presentation, is 3.7 billion, and for universities, 17.5 billion. So all of that money, we're the bank, we're the distributor. So that comes to 30 billion of the 32 billion. Then there's other public entities such as, well, the NSFAS, a very important entity, which takes 2 billion, and then we've got the Council of Higher Education and SAHCA. So in the end, despite having this very generous budget to actually run the department, which means to pay, do the compensation of employees, to manage all of the operational commitments, and then for any projects that we need money to run, it's less than a billion. I think that's important to understand. In the end, we've only got about 137 million for operational expenses after we've done compensation of employees. And I see at least one member raising his eyebrows sympathetically because that is very little to survive, to get to Cape Town and visit you as much as we'd like to, etc. Now, if I look at the specific items of the budget, the figures that you've got in front of you include compensation of employees. So I've already indicated that the bulk of that money goes to compensation of most of the money is already gone, and that's the in and out money. The money that's left covers the compensation of employees and the operational, and the money that we have then, the 137 million for operational after commitments, we're having a very careful process in the department to establish how we distribute that across projects. Almost like an internal bidding process. So administration, including compensation of employees, it's 100 million, HRD 26 million, universities 19 million, vocational and continuing 3, and skills 168. Now, if I can come to the question of the conditional grants. Members will remember that Minister of Finance in the medium-term budget policy statement made the announcement then that he was introducing a new conditional grant, which had not previously existed. And that conditional grant is for the further education and training colleges. And what the Minister of Finance proposed, or indicated his intention to do in the medium-term budget policy statement, and then took forward in the budget statement, was that all of the money that was in the provincial equitable share for colleges, it was a particular section of the provincial education that was removed from the provincial equitable share, raised to the level of national, and is now being redistributed in a conditional grant. So that is a significant policy change, and I need to explain that. The reason that the Minister of Finance has done that is because with the creation of the Department of Higher Education and Training, colleges are a very critical component of the whole post-school education and training system. The current legislative framework makes them a concurrent function, and we're working very well with the provinces. But the policy intention of the minister is to move them to being a national function. They need to take their part fully with the whole skills sector and with universities as institutions that are post-school working on a national system. So in discussion with the Minister of Finance, it was agreed that we should work in anticipation of that legislative shift by making a conditional grant
And I'll explain that now. One of the reasons why I believe that to have been, first of all, I will argue in discussion with the committee that the move of colleges from provincial to national is absolutely important in terms of delivery and in terms of integration and in terms of the kind of mobility that one needs between the different post-school options. But the second reason why I will argue that to make it a conditional grant was critical is that the evidence is very clear that the resource availability to colleges, whilst it has remained at the provincial level, has in fact been eroded slowly over time. When the recapitalization grant was made available, provinces who are under pressure at the school level started diverting money from the college budget to the school budget. Understandably, and I wouldn't judge that, but we do need now to ring fence that money and make sure that it is dedicated and not dribbled away into other very important components. So if we look at the Division of Revenue bill that you have within you. Firstly, the Schedule 4 functions that are given in clauses 9 to 15 of the bill just tell us how we manage a conditional grant, and the way that we're taking forward is quite clearly consistently with the framework of the Division of Revenue. And the next thing that I just need to show you in the bill that you're considering is page 114, which gives the grant framework. So if we look more specifically at DORA, there's nothing to municipalities. It's only the provinces. Conditional grant for colleges, which has come out of the provincial equitable share and is now a conditional grant, and page 114 of, I've got a version that comes from the published version, so I'm sure it's the same for you. But page 114 gives the higher education and training grant, transferring department to the provincial departments, and that is the framework that we're asking you to support the adoption of. In terms of this bill. Just to give you a little more of the detail, the amount that's been allocated has been estimated from the last year's MTEF, and it's also been adjusted to reflect some of the past allocations to the sector, even though that was done through the provincial equitable formula and there was discretion within provinces. In terms of the provincial allocations, you might want to just look at page 37 of the bill, because page 37, if I'm correct, I'm looking at the right thing, yeah, will give you a sense of, it's page 37. It gives you a sense of when we, from the conditional grant, reallocate to provinces, how much each province will receive. And that's based on historic patterns of figures. So the table Schedule 4 on page 37 will tell you how much we're giving to provinces. The funding of the grant over the MTF period is as given there, and that includes an additional allocation made by the Minister in the budget to accommodate the improvement in conditions of services. The employees and colleges have been through quite a tumultuous time, part of which means that they are now employed by the councils and not by the provincial departments. It's part of making the sector more flexible, more responsive. And so the employees at colleges were excluded from the salary negotiations. And so we now are undertaking salary negotiations to improve conditions of service. So the whole grant management and monitoring will be done in terms of DORA. You've seen how much we've been allocating to provinces. You see the grant framework. And now we are just quickly in the presentation just telling you what we expect the provinces to do. We're giving a framework which includes what we expect them to enroll in terms of both the new NCV program as well as the old NATED programs.
and we're expecting them to continue with the project for expanding ICT and to continue with the implementation of new management information systems. They must comply with the funding norms, which are part of the legislative framework, and they must refurbish and maintain. The criteria in terms of how the money is transferred is clearly in terms of DORA, and that's covered in Section 7, etc. of the bill, as well as in the conditional grant framework. And then we, as the National Department, also need to do things to make sure that both sides of the bargain are upheld. So we will monitor the grant, we will report to Treasury, we will monitor the utilization of the grant, we will carry on doing the work on program-based funding to make sure that we're supporting colleges as well as we can within the fiscal framework. And we will carry on working with provincial levels to provide institutional support. I've nearly concluded a visit to each of the provinces. We have met with the colleges, the college councils, the provincial education department, so that we all know we're speaking from one page, so people understand the line function, understand that it's a period of transition. So provincial education departments have particular responsibilities. We will be establishing a MINMEC, where the minister will be in liaison with the provincial MECs on the matter of both FET colleges and adult education, and then the payment of the grant will be in those tranches. So, Chairperson, that's a very quick overview. I haven't really dealt with content issues, except to say that in terms of the FET colleges, which are the relevant component of DORA, is that we know that the colleges have a huge amount of work ahead of them. A great deal of work has been done in recent years, and I think that we're poised to take it further, because now that colleges will be part of the national post-school system, I'm finding that there's almost a delight in just putting the colleges in the same room as the CETAs and saying, how do we address exactly the problem that you identify? That large numbers of young people are going through FET colleges, require workplace education in order to qualify for a trade test, but there's no workplace opportunities. You put the CETAs and the colleges together and the ideas just flow. And you will see that when we present our strategic plan that there's some amazing and lovely things happening there. So the conversations both between colleges and the workplace learning opportunities that are facilitated through the CETAs, as well as conversations with the colleges and the universities of technology, are also very powerful. So I think it is a precarious sector. It's been through huge changes, and it's now going through these new changes. But we're determined to strengthen that as a very important part of the national system. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
DJ? I'm learning to call you DJ. you know, you're raising very important things. Sometimes we're dealing with the division of revenue, but obviously as politicians, all kinds of interests because of our constituency work, so that we overlap. If we do that, please bear with us. We have to do this thing. Just that I know that your literacy is really not very up to scratch. You know, I'm looking at slide 6. You're saying 32, we're reading 23. but when you began to break it down, it was clear that you're talking 32. Okay.
Person, I'm glad that you have asked this question, because that's precisely my point, is that we get 32 billion, I'm correct, Jens, and then 13 more goes away immediately, gone, with a post box. I mean, obviously with post box comes particular legislative responsibilities. You can put conditions and you must improve the sick. What's left is less than a billion. And then for each of these programs, if you add them up, it would come to the billion. Jens might have to help me because he's very experienced on this. And our argument is that once you've got rid of everything that moves out, once you're then left with your billion, and you've then compensated employees, we're left with a very small amount. But let's ask Jens to clarify through your chairperson.
Okay, the difference between the 32 and the 23.7 on the slide is the direct charges that we receive from national revenue, which is simply an in and out transaction in the department's books. So in the E&E, it's also very clear that you have the 23.7, which is the actual departmental voted funds, but then we also have 8.4 billion, which is direct charges. So if you add those together, you get the 32 that the DG is referring to.
Now, thank you for the clarity. Honorable members, I'm in your hands now. Honorable Ramatakana, Honorable Mwabo.
No, thank you, Chairperson and the DG.
You have your hand up, no?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
for the presentation, I have just three questions. The first question I just want to ask in terms of general question is what is the model, the informing model for put together of all the functions together? What is this evidence-based model that puts this together? That extends to whether you're talking FET, college. I just want to know, is it gut feel? Is it, what's in for evidence-based model? I would have an interest to just also get insight of it, of peruse this evidence-based model that informed this. For an example, I look at the adult basic education and ask myself a question, various, where must it be? You saying it has to be there, so I'm asking, what is this model? That's the first question. Is it basically, can we be assured that there is going to be this happy marriage, this happy days to come in terms of this put together? But the second question I just want to ask is that one of the concurrent function. How do we mediate it forward? Is it worrying factor? We know the concurrent function is a constitutional requirement, but it has been operational for the last 15 or 16 years differently. And the third question and the short question is this red light flickering that you mentioned in your slide, that we're heading for a short fall. Now, Treasury sitting here as well, what are we talking? What are we talking when we say this? So that we a little bit have an idea. Maybe there's a quantification that is taking place, but those are figures that are covered or kept with the Treasury for later. What are we talking? So those are the three questions, I think.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson Didi. Thanks for the presentation. Two very short questions. I think these fall under FET and the budget therein. We have been talking about
teacher training colleges, nursing colleges as part of FET, do you think within the 5 years will it be possible to have them opened with respect to the budget that you have? The other question goes to you, Treasury. There are some agreements, but within the agreements there are constraints, particularly around labor and education. How expedient is Treasury going to be in order for this department to be fully functional, in line with the grants and so forth? Thank you.
Thank you. Another
good
listener.
Thanks, Chair. DJ, for me, when we're speaking about increasing the throughput of students going forward, what influence has the department got to ensure that institutions that are going to have to deliver on our targets commit sufficient resources to infrastructure? Okay. And then the other question I have, the conditional grants for the FET colleges are clearly then based on the historically eroded figures, but it doesn't look like going forward in the MTF period there's significant changes to rectify that situation. Okay? And then thirdly, I don't expect an answer on this one now, but if we look at the huge amount of money that we put through the institutions of higher learning in the country, I don't know, well, I did try to ask one of the lady that was here previously last year, has any research been done on to what extent are we subsidizing the global economy in absorbing our students? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My questions will be on grants. The first one, I have a problem in pronouncing this NAFTAS or. Yes. Mm. How accessible is it, and what criteria definitely is used there? And the fact that there are these problems, we don't know when does it become a bazaar or a grant somewhere there, and the repayment is this, you already understand what I want to ask you. And then my next question will go to the third department, the Department of Education, which means you can share it. During the presentation of National Treasury, we were very much concerned about the grants that were going to lapse, because these grants concern sanitation. Someone from finance is here. Water and sanitation at clinics and school grants, and the backlogs in electrification of clinics and schools grants. And for them, we wonder what informed them, because as the Department of Education, I don't think really the department could have told them that the grants have served its purpose. We have beautiful toilets, we have electricity, we have water. Those grants can lapse. That's just what I want. I would like to know the what informs them. Thank you.
Okay.
It's just want to preempt FFC. It's a taking away of this FET. You know, when it's in education, when it was there as a basic education, they counted it as part of their budget. Now the implications of that, though it is supposed to have been ring-fenced for this purpose, Mr. Acting DG, I hope you could be listening, so please don't disturb the Acting DG. I was just saying, the question I was raising is that though the
the removal of FET from your Department of Education to higher education, the funding part thereof had implications. I'm not sure what negative implication it had. You know, when the Department of Social Services or the Department of Social Development paying grants at provinces, though it was said that we are removing only the part of the paying of grants, but it had other implications as well, financial implications on that. I don't know. Maybe you'll still be able to come back to some of the questions that we're raising now, because they affect you. Thank you.
No, that's a very important question, Chairperson, and I will try and address it. I think I've got 6 people asking probably 20 questions altogether, but I'm looking forward to engaging them. I think the first question from Member Mascani about what is the evidence-based model that informed the President's decision to create this new department in this way? That's as I understand the question. What was the evidence that he used? And I would say that, although I've never had an opportunity to discuss this personally with the President, my assumption has been that he worked very strongly from the experience of GPSA. Because GPSA did probably the most rigorous analysis of the skills crisis that we've ever undertaken as a country. And that's my assumption. When I think, why did the President do this thing, which is, I think, an excellent idea, and I'll explain why, is that there's a range of structural challenges that we face in the country, huge skill bottlenecks. Everybody's aware of the question of artisan training, technical training, and in priority and scarce skills. There's a range of estimates that float around about how many engineers we need, how many plumbers we need, how many, and there's processes around that. We also know that there's very low participation rates, that there's large numbers of young people that are not on employment, education, and training. That means there's between the ages of 18 to 24, our estimates is about 2.4 million. It's about 40% of young people. They're not in education, they're not employed, and they're not in training. That's a huge structural challenge. We also know that there's huge distortions in terms of the shape and size of the post-schooling system. It's, for reasons I'll explain, it's a little bit difficult to estimate that shape and size, but one of the thumbsucks that's being used, it is more or less double the number of people in universities than there are in the colleges. And that doesn't match the skill requirements in the economy, and there's also huge inefficiencies. So my understanding is that it's the driving need to respond to the needs of the country, urban and rural, in terms of the needs for skills, and to align the mechanisms that we have. Now, if I talk about our understanding of what those mechanisms are, is that if you look at the components of our department, and I haven't explained this in the presentation, I thought that I would do it in relation to the response to the questions, is that the framing architecture for me is the human resource development strategy of our country. The HRDSA is a special project that's based in our department. Governance terms, it's led by an HRDSA council, which is chaired by the Deputy President. The first meeting of the HRD council is going to take place on the 30th of March, and it will be launched then. And the purpose of the HRD strategy is to take a long-term perspective, looking at different development scenarios across the range of development policies that they have, whether it be the rural development strategy, the EPAC, whether it's the innovation strategy, where any of those strategies, and say what are the human resource requirements to support those strategies. So that's the overall frame, is the HRDSA. Then at another level, and I kind of see that at the top and the base, when I try and visualize it, is the fact that we have an incredible policy framework in the country for the funding of skills training. And that is that, as everyone knows, all registered employees over a particular size are required to commit 1% of the personnel budget towards skills training that takes place through the skills levy, which is managed through SARS and comes to us. That's some of the money that comes in and out. So you've got this resource that comes through the skills levy. It's channeled through the CETAs and the National Skills Fund. And the CETAs and the National Skills Fund are guided by the National Human Resource Development Strategy, which is going to be devised for the first time as a symbiotic, close relationship between the Human Resource Development Strategy and the Skills Development Strategy, with these resources being guided by that architecture. Now, those things were all previously in different departments, let alone the middle of the circle, which is who's the delivery agents. Well, there's a range of private providers, but we have 50 public FET colleges with over 100 different sites. We've got 23 private universities. They must be the primary providers of the skills that are required as identified in HRDSA. So there's bits from Department of Education, there's bits from Labour, bits from the Presidency, and that's the new architecture. That, I think, is what I would say is the evidence base to inform this model of what's with us. One of the things I didn't comment on, but it, as I look at you, I remember you asked a question. It's a question of adult education. Our colleges and our universities and our workplace must be addressing youth and adults. Adults, you know, when you say youth and adults, what's a youth and what's an adult? But if you just say post-school. Post-school, people need access to learning opportunities in which they can move from work to learning, from learning to work, in a seamless way, in a way that makes sense. Some of it will be in the workplace, some of it will be outside of the workplace. For the unemployed, it will be outside of the workplace, but in support of the activities that are people undertaking. So that's, I suppose, getting into a lot of content. So let me pause there. Now you're becoming a portfolio committee. So I just want to then, just if you'll allow, to jump down to the question asked by Member Lesner. I didn't get your surname. Snow. Oh, okay. Is that you asked a very important question. When you said the conditional grant for colleges, where are we going to get the money? Now, that is exactly what was in the President's mind and is clearly in the Minister of Finance's mind, and has made it explicit in the medium-term budget policy statement, is that if you start using the synergies of the resources that are available in the CETAs and the NSF, you're going to be able to fund the growth that we need in colleges. Because if colleges are responsive to the skills environment and are offering courses that industry and commerce need, then they'll be funded through the skills framework. So that $6.7 billion that goes off to CETAs, if colleges are doing what they should, and we've got to get them there, they'll be the providers. Does that make sense? Okay. So, second question, sorry, that was a long answer, Chairperson, I will try and hurry. Is the concurrent function, how do we mediate forward? Well, we do understand that there would need to be an amendment to a schedule of the Constitution, so that will be going through and is in the middle of going through a cabinet process. Our understanding is that there is strong support across all of the provinces for this model that I've just explained, and we don't anticipate any difficulties, but clearly constitutional amendments occupy a particular importance in the way that we manage legislation. So that is why we've worked so hard at establishing a relationship of close working relationships between the provinces and ourselves. I've visited so far 7 provinces since January, explicitly meeting all of the college councils, all of the college principals, all of the employees working in the further education branch and the senior leadership. And I'm saying, we're in this together. The line is with the province. If anybody ever says, what must I do? It's the province that says what you must do. But please let us work together so closely that there's never a disjunction between what it is that we're saying and what it is that the province is saying, and we're going to work at that. I have to address the third question about the shortfall. You see, there is a red light flickering, but my responsibility as a DG is to make sure that it doesn't result in a shortfall. What it does mean is that we have to manage very prudently. Chairperson, you'll be interested to know that I've already said to the Portfolio Committee for Higher Education and Training, can we not use some electronic mechanisms for some of our presentations? So we don't bring six officials when they run six officials. Surely one or two people must be there. But just even the cost cutting of flying many officials down for portfolio, it's not a disrespect. I think it can be just as effective. But you can have the DG or the DDG and other people in support. And I would love to do a sum about how much that would save us. But we're going to have real challenges in terms of operating within the small operational and project budget. But our job is to make sure that we do. Otherwise, I will be in trouble with SCOPA. I think the next question from the follower is the question of colleges. We are understanding that our responsibility is to establish a policy and legislative framework for all of the colleges, even those that may still be with the sectoral department. So, for example, nursing colleges. The Department of Health is really working very hard at the development of nursing colleges. It makes sense for those to be located within the Department of Health because of the close training links with hospitals, but we would expect health to comply with legislation governing qualifications frameworks, etc. That is still going to be a challenge because it's almost competing legislation. Some of the departments have legislation which allows them to establish colleges, which I think in many instances they should. But they should also be mutually supportive in terms of functionality. So if I take agriculture, for example, there's some excellent agricultural colleges. They require special facilities. They need to fall within the framework of higher education and training in terms of qualification framework, strong links to universities, etc., for progression with qualifications. But they also need, you know, some cows and chickens and fields and tractors, which may not necessarily be our strength. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be offering agricultural courses at some of the FET colleges, which is indeed the case, and that needs to be strengthened. And one of the things that I'm very excited about is that we're working together with Rural Development and Land Reform around the Skill Development Strategy for Rural Development. A lot of the work so far has been pretty much urban. So what can we do in 5 years within the budget? You mustn't look at this budget alone for those kinds of expansions. In terms of Member Snell's other question about how do we influence the budgets, the budgets for higher education, there's a very sophisticated steering formula of funding. I think that in many ways, although we're going to have a review process this year, and some people would argue that it tends to perpetuate current patterns of spending, it's a steering mechanism which allows maximum autonomy of the institutions within frameworks that we set. So, for example, enrollment planning. Universities work with us to determine what enrollment they are going to have in particular disciplines at different levels. And it's a framework that's agreed long-term in advance, and then universities have the flexibility to plan. So we can say now that the national frameworks are saying that we want to have so many PhDs, so many output graduates in engineering or in health sciences. So that's the planning model, and then universities operate within that. In terms of infrastructure, it is more of a challenge. With infrastructure, there's particular infrastructure grants in higher education, and they're aimed at the scarce and critical areas. So at the moment, the focus is on medicine, engineering, technology. With colleges, there has been this recapitalization, but although we have an MTF, we also have things called MTF bids, and we will be preparing our own MTF bids in terms of some of the challenges committees identified. The question about are we subsidizing the global economy is in fact a global question, because in this modern world there is so much mobility of skill, and it is inevitable. And I can't answer you specifically today on the evidence. I'm aware of some, but I don't think that I have a grasp of the whole area. It has been work that's been done in HRD and its predecessor, GIPSA, and I ask them, there is also mobility in, by the way. Yeah, it's in and out. And I'll find out if there are particular papers and make them available to you. In terms of the big question of NSF, members may be aware that the minister put into place a review committee. He's going to be, according to his diary, releasing that report on the 16th of March. It's the first time I've said that publicly, so you can write that down. It got approval from Cabinet on Wednesday to proceed. The committee's done excellent work. And the reason that the review committee had to be put into place is precisely because of the questions that you're asking and the fact that it hasn't been altogether well understood. Basically, there's about, I think TNF will correct me, but it's about three billion, between 2 to 3 billion that's allocated to the NSFAS every year. 17% of university students get NSFAS. Probably 30 to 40% of students would like to get NSFAS. And one of the questions that has been taxing the system for a long time and is taken forward differently across the different universities is, do you give enough money to a fewer number of students, or do you get little bits of money to more students? And obviously you can see the difficult choices there. With some students, access to a little bit of money enables them just to then, with help, with loans, get through. If you say no, 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 that puts students at risk, because if they don't get the money to start, then you pull back and you say the money's for a smaller number. Okay, so let's say it's a smaller number, it's a finite number. Say it's 17% at the moment, whether or not it should be, you should stretch or retract. Then the question is, who should get that money? Well, the answer in policy terms has been unequivocal. It's the poorest. So the original policy frameworks worked on an understanding of the 5 tax brackets, and they say if the family income is less than 120,000, then you qualify. Now you and I know that if you earn 200,000, you can't afford university. So that is where the pressure is. So the bursary and loan thing is related to affordability and assessing, but the pressure on NSFAS is that our definition of poverty is making the money available to people who earn, families who earn less than 120,000, and indeed that money is completely consumed with people whose families are under less than 100,000. But more money is probably needed, which is what this committee must hear all of the time. Chairperson, your question, I think, is a very important question, and it links to the past chairperson's question. And I think for this, we just want very strong policy. We want your understanding and therefore the policy support. The chairperson's, the deputy, well, your question, remember, was what happens when grants lapse? What happens when it's over? And your question is, what are the FFC implications? And I want to put those two together. This is intended to be a short-term conditional grant. It's a transitional thing whilst we relocate it as a national function. Clearly, it does have FFC implications. But I think that what we need from Parliament is to have a strong understanding about the policy imperative of colleges being located nationally. If people understand that, then everything else will follow. The legislative support, the constitutional support. And so it's not going to lapse, it's going to, the funding will then just continue at national level and then, so it's a slightly different thing. I don't know, that question is directed at BASIC. And in terms of FFC, FFC may very well want to understand the policy considerations on which this is based, and we'll be hoping that the appropriation committee understands that and can support it in engagement with FFC and say, no, this belongs nationally. It's a post-schooling issue, which goes back to the first question, why was it done? Thank you.
Gigi, thank you very much. These are very interesting matters. We're going to tend to be portfolio members of the portfolio committees are matters of their interest because well, there are financial implications. So there's a very thin line that divides those who are supposed to deal with the department wholly
and us asking ourselves questions or saying, is the money going the right direction? Sorry? Well, okay, no, I'm going to allow them. I'm very generous, you know. I will allow Treasury. So, National Treasury? I know you're going to be very short.
So, person in committee, can I just ask a question for clarity? Should I limit my response just to this discussion?
Sorry. Before I do that, acting teaching, there were questions that were really spreading on both lanes, you know? Just quickly.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. On the one question about the grants that are lapsing, I don't have sufficient details to inform a response, but I can say that we are aware of grants made for water and sanitation handled by the Department of Water Affairs, and a grant on electrification of schools handled by the Department of Energy. Now, we're aware that those grants have come to an end. On the water and sanitation grant, there's been considerable rollout. On energy, we're not sure, but we think the performance of that hasn't been good. I don't want to speak on behalf of another department. But certainly, the needs of the schools in each of these areas are far from fully addressed. And going forward, we'll address it through that infrastructure plan I spoke about. But the actual grant itself, its mechanism, and its lapsing, I think, is a matter for those departments to give more details. I would have perhaps known more about it, but at the moment I don't have the information yet, Chair. On the FET one, which is the other question put directly to us, it's a relative answer, because what happens is in a province, and provinces have indicated this to us, they've got amount of expenditure for schooling, or for their budget, which FET was part. Now, if you take out an allocation for FET, certain assumptions inform the slice you take out. And provinces said what's left is not enough for them to run their operations. But again, that depends on a range of assumptions and factors. It depends on whether the province in the first place was giving enough money for education in the province. If they haven't, then obviously what's left won't be enough. So these are all things that, you know, in the discussions of the detailed implications for provincial budgets, one has to look at. They've declared now a certain position, but one has to look at the numbers itself in more detail. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Captain TG. Over to you, National Treasurer. And the FFC will comment.
Chairperson and committee, I would just like to find out whether I should restrict my comments just to this presentation or also give some bit of feedback on the issues that were raised during the week. I've got some good progress to report on the queries that you had as well. Okay, so I'll restrict myself then just to the issues raised during this session.
I'm sorry, I hope that Mr. Ramatagan will wait for those responses, because he has an interest.
Yeah. Personal interest.
No,
okay, let's just get to the FET colleges, and I would just like to add a few things to what's already been said. And I think the arguments put on the table are really quite very important. But I think the first point that we need to make is that there's different ways that you actually deal with the funding of provinces. And funding can either be dealt through the provincial equitable share or through conditional grants, if it's a concurrent function, which FET Colleges currently is. What then informs where you place a service is firstly also what are the imperatives and outcomes that you are striving towards. If there's very specific national priorities that you want to achieve, which is not achievable through a general allocation, then the general principle is that you actually allocate it through a conditional grant. So there's sufficient motivation to say that the way the current funding worked wasn't sufficient to ensure that national priorities are met. So just on that basis alone, you could argue that that conversion makes a lot of sense. It doesn't take it away from the province. It just makes it subject to provinces being under a bit more strict control of how they spend the money. Another important point then with regard to a conditional grant, there's a conditional grant framework which then specifically indicates the provinces what they may do and what they may not do. That conditional grant framework is developed by the National Department responsible for that function in consultation with the National Treasury. The fact that a new conditional grant would be established, as pointed out by the DG, has been known since June, July last year already. So substantial communication has taken place, which has given the National Department sufficient time to make themselves ready to administer a conditional grant, and the DG is agreeing to that. So I don't think that's an area of concern. As pointed out in the presentation as well, there has been a lot of interaction already between the National Department and provinces specific to this issue. I think just another issue that I would like to point out, particularly to the FFC as well, is that when the new administration came into being, quite a lot of decisions were made where functions should ideally be placed. And that was actually supported by a presidential proclamation, which I can give you a copy of, which very specifically indicated in that schedule that the previous minister responsible, cabinet member responsible for FET, was the Minister of Basic Education. It then also very clearly indicated in this proclamation that the new minister responsible for that responsibility is the Minister of Higher Education. So that indication that the shift is supported has been given at the highest level possible, and that's the President of our country. So I think that is with regard to those type of issues. Just with regard to the general funding issues again, there is a very strong drive in government to actually affect cost savings, and the pressure is placed on everyone, municipalities, provinces, and all individual national departments. When a new department was established, basic allocations were given for all newly established departments for within certain types of guidelines and deadlines, or time, you know, within certain ratios and the like. And it's again, it places quite a big burden on the fiscus as a whole. So that type of limitation should also be understood. If the money is not finite, it does have a bit of a problem as well. Thanks.
Thank you very much. But on the other, you'll still come for the other issue. I still don't have a letter in front of me. Ms. Ntenga, FFC.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to make comments on the issue of the budget, basically, for the conditional grant on FET. It is very critical that the department should ensure that it comes out with a proper baseline for the allocation of this conditional grant. The reason why I'm saying that is because the DG has indicated that when it was in the provinces were using that money to fund other functions. So as you've indicated how you've actually came out with the, you know, the figures that you've indicated here, for instance, you've taken what was in the equitable share, one should keep in mind that even what was in the equitable share might not have been enough, you know, to find the FET colleges. So that is why I'm saying it's very critical that you establish a proper baseline so that when the decision comes, when this conditional grant now, or should I say when this funding now is going to be part of the national budget, you'll know that at least there's a proper baseline, you know, for the funding of FET colleges. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, but
no thanks, Honorable Mashagan. You're catching an aeroplane to Cape Town. No, thank you. Okay.
No, thank you very much. But I think that the points that you're raising are very important. But I think what National Teller says, there are so many of these challenges and the resources are limited. We just have to make these choices. But I think we're moving from the premise that we're dealing with new departments all together. I'm sure when we go to Ms. Fano, I'm sure when we go to adjustment, and I hope that I didn't hear the minister talking about this adjustment. Sometimes, if he doesn't mention it now, it becomes difficult in the later stage to say, look, there should be adjustments. I hope that PG, you have some kind of those arrangements, because it could have been difficult to say. For sure, exactly how much will be necessary. But now, once you are on the field, it's easy now to start seeing that, look, there are loopholes here that we need to close. I'm hoping that when we go to adjustments and MTBPS, some of these issues will be addressed. But we also understand the times that we are in terms of these resources, you know. I normally listen to this lady who reads Xhosa News, you know. She normally says, you know, the enemy is the time, you know. With so much information in front of us, we can't really interrogate it to the level at which you would have loved to. The house is just beginning now. It's getting thinner and thinner because people are... But I think that we have really covered very important issues. Issues of the budget constraints. I mean, we have spoken about the... I'm sure which we'll address as we move forward, this FET conditional grant, but also will be able to cause at the level of basic education side certainty in terms of what is their budget now. Now they're closing their eyes on FET allocation and be much, much clearer on their own, what we call budget. And DG higher education, I think earlier we commented about this, the accreditation of these courses that are given by FET, especially with respect to the, what do you call it, banking side, I mean this accounting and what, because poor students think that they have accounting that they have acquired, and now you go outside. It's a challenge. The recognition of that now is a challenge, and you have difficulty when they come to you to say, look, man, maybe something that I think that's why on our side we think that to have FET located in higher education is the best thing that we have really had so far, so that many issues, challenges that are there can be dealt with. I'm hoping that PG, there will be able to invite you sometime, and PG from basic education, so that we can tease more on these issues. Very soon, we will be dealing with the expenditure. This committee will also be dealing with expenditure, and CFO knows that. I mean, we have been working with him for some time. Okay. But it's Friday today. I would like to wish all of you a very relaxed weekend. You know, I suppose this week was a very long week, but for this committee.
Yeah.
Maybe 2-3 weeks time, then they can take that rest, because they have to compile a report and Parliament must debate these issues on Tuesday it will be debating your fiscal framework, and on Thursday it will be the division of revenue. I hope that these members are sympathetic, you know, to approve this. So can I say at this stage, this meeting, no. Before we do that, just in brief, Ms. Fano, our item.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, excuse me.
Can't we excuse the department?
I don't want to do that.
Okay.
But because you're proposing that we excuse, then you are excused. Thank you very much. I'm hoping to finalize some of the things with you at the airport.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll be as brief as I could.
Thank you
for me. Yeah. And with regard to the first point I would like to thank the committee first for is giving us the opportunity as National Treasury to sit through all the discussions. We find it very useful. And I think the most important thing here is that we learn a lot as well on when we go back to our offices, what type of things we need to take into account. For example, one of the things that I did pick up is, you know, how we actually introduce and also how we phase out conditional grants. And that definitely we need to alert the committee to the fact and also the national departments concerned that it's not just their decision to a large extent. The grant should really have achieved its objectives before it is considered. So even if a deadline is stipulated for closure, it can be reconsidered and reopened if those conditions have not been met. That's something we'll take back and we'll in future look at much more strongly. Then the second issue, it was when the FFT made their presentation, the issue was raised with regard to the constitutionality of the revenue-raising component in the local government.
I just want to kind of interrupt you. I don't want to have to go back to that now. These members will tell me. I want you to address we gave you a mandate, yourselves and COGTA, to say, go out. Sort out this thing.
Yeah.
Friday, we want a report back on those matters. And the acting DG for COGTA had sent me a message. I communicated to that message. I said, no, on Friday, we've sorted out issues. On Friday, you will get a confirmation of that I can give to the committee to say the matter is sorted out. He confirmed yesterday that by 10 o'clock, you received it this morning. I have not received it. Thank you. I'm sorry, I don't know if Tove has received. He also has not received anything from COGTA.
I'll follow up on that one because before the committee started, we did follow up with the office of the DG of COGTA. They have signed the letter and they have faxed it through to you about your office. They informed us 5 to 10 this morning. Maybe if you quick report back is just to stipulate that on all the issues raised, National Treasury and COGTA agreed on how to resolve the issue. It doesn't require any change to the division of revenue. Some of the issues will be dealt through cooperation between the two departments. The others will be dealt within the conditional grant framework of the big cities and the MIC.
Okay.
So that's a short report. I can take you through.
No. We just need that short report, and we really appreciate it. I think that it will make much more sense once we get that letter of confirmation about what you have done, so that we don't go and grandstand for something that has been resolved there. But thank you very much. And
I cancelled my flight.
No, we have not cancelled. We haven't cancelled ours.
It will be quick. That's a pity that it can't close.
I would really like to wind up.
Okay,
please,
quick,
please.
Jason, I believe that we need to clarify confusion that's taking place around the strategic plans and monitoring outcomes through BAS and PERSO. And the strategic plans, you see, with the outcomes or objectives that are in the strategic plans, they link to budgets. We as committees look at them, or other committees look at them, they make recommendations to the House to pass the budget based on that. Those are divided into quarters, which we should be able to get as well to monitor progress on deliverables. Managers need those to be able to manage the process of obtaining those deliverables. See where it's wrong with. Those are also linked to the performance management development systems of departments. They're also linked to this, to the assessment of contracted staff and to their bonuses. Now, if Treasury says that BAS and Purcell can show where those outcomes are going according to strategic plans, I would like them to come and show us how it's done. If they can't do it, they must tell us what they are doing. Because in that meeting last week with the minister, one of the senior officials stated that BAS and Purcell can do it, and it's only a lack of training of personnel within the department. The department said BAS and Purcell can give you output of expenditure, but not against monitoring outcomes or deliverables. So I think really we needed this committee, that chair, because that thing, if it can't, if that thing can't happen, you know, it makes a mockery of us looking at these strategic plans to pass budgets, managers to managers, bonuses to get paid, the whole
thing. Okay. I've heard you, Honorable Snell, but I think that you can open this debate
now. No, open it, Chair.
Yeah, but I think the very important issue that you're raising, it's a very important issue that you're raising. The issue, I think that as maybe sometimes we listen and assume that we understand. If somebody use English, English for me, I don't know what. Definitely, it's definitely not the first language, English, for me. But if somebody, sometimes I notice that with those people who English is their first language, some other terms are used interchangeably. If, for instance, you're talking about the outputs and the outcomes, sometimes people tend to conflate these things. And the outcomes, my understanding of outcomes, totally different. In that you, as a public representative, if there was a program and you have noticed that this has changed the life of these people in this way, then you will say that it has achieved the outcomes. And you can't, what you call it now, implement the program in January and think that in March you will see the outcomes. Do not observe the outcomes. The outcomes will be over time. Over time, then you can notice the outcomes. That's why sometimes people talk, and I don't think that we should really pin down on their English, but sometimes it has implications if you use certain terminology, and that it could be just a question of clarity. But outcomes, it's not something that you, when there's been input in March, the programs kicks off, and the outcomes may be something that we, as public representatives, are supposed really to say, this has been, that's why we keep on talking about evaluating. Are you evaluating these programs? Are they making impact? Are they making impact on our, what you call it, communities? Those are the outcomes. Something else, that's my interpretation. So. But I would really like to thank you very much. But just to ask this, everyone, ANC, just to ask this ANC component, just to, for 1 minute. To everyone, all the best for the weekend. Ms. Tenga, all the best. See you. Yeah, all the best. So.
Another man phone.
Kenji?
Another man phone.
No, you're fine. You're fine. You're not ANC study group. Only one the study group.
Hello.
Come back.
You can use your teeth, your tobacco, your pipe, everything.
I appreciate your help. No, I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.